Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, James Harden got doubled up by Luguentz Dort in a game seven. And yes, he got that block and all that stuff, but I usually start with some kind of a joke or anything like that. This is me being the most serious I can possibly be. I don't ever want to hear another comparison to Kobe Bryant. Ever. That's it. It's over.
I have to tread lightly here, but we were robbed of a legendary Twitter night.
We were.
And OKC won that game. And if you're a primary or secondary scoring option on a team, this is as diplomatic as I can be. Mm-hmm. If you're one of the guys who's a shot creator on your team, you shouldn't be passing the ball unless you've earned advantage or tried to earn advantage. Because mm-hmm. the whole team working is dependent upon whether or not you can draw a second defender, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's all spot-up shooters, right? It's Harden, Russ, and spot-up shooters. So if it puts the rest of the team in a real bind when he's just passing the ball, like without creating advantage, right?
Right.
Like swinging the ball to Danwell House at the top of the key without like attempting a drive and kick or anything like that it really, really harms just kind of how the whole thing is built.
It was frustrating and hilarious watching the end of that game because like James Harden, historically not great in game seven situations. Chris Paul, especially bad in late possession playoff situations. Russell Westbrook, like historically not somebody who people point to as like winning basketball player all the time. And of course that's how the game ends. And then on top of everything else, like you and I, we just talked. Last time you and I talked, we talked about the refereeing, right?
Yeah, and man. This is a whole day of that too.
Like, good Lord.
It happened in the Milwaukee-Miami game too.
What are we doing? Like in the Milwaukee game, what's Dragic supposed to do there on the three-pointer? He's literally standing with his hands up.
I really hope that the league and the competition committee take a look at just how certain plays are approached. We saw it at the end of the – there were so many plays in the end, the last 2 minutes of the Houston-OKC game where a player was attempting to exaggerate contact or throw themselves into contact.
Oh,
basically, it was foul hunting, right?
Gosh.
And it was like – they're trying to like kind of game the rules. We've talked about this recently, mm-hmm. right? It was more an attempt to game the rules than to play the game.
Yeah.
And – it's bad for the sport on a couple of levels, right? Is that it goes against the spirit of the game, right? Like the actual being better than the guy across from you at the skills, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like looking to the authorities of the game to be the one who decide it rather than the competition, right? Which is what it's about. And it's also, it's extending games. Like we didn't get to watch the first 8 or 9 minutes of a game seven in a place where the NBA's got full control over the, you know, like it's their campus, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's their logistics that their time that they're operating on. Why are we missing most of the first quarter of a game seven?
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and it's because there are the refs are doing too much, man. There's just, it's overly officious and it's impacting the players are reacting toward that because they're getting rewarded for it. It's smart of them to do that because it's really hard to score down the stretch in a game where everybody's closing out and everybody's playing as hard as possible. That's why that Utah Denver game was like 80-77. Game sevens are crazy, man, because everybody's playing like full tilt and that really, really impacts how easy it is to score. And so when you're under conditions like that, that's even more reason to be like, oh, I'm going to throw myself into somebody. Yeah. And if we're in the bonus, I'm an 83% free throw shooter. That's a way better. I mean, that's a best position anyway, but under those circumstances, it's gold. And that's why you see so much of it. And I really hope the league needs to bring that in. I really believe just for the good of the game, they need to bring it in.
Keith Parrish, who has been on the show from Fast Break Breakfast, and then he does Grits and Grind, I think, with Blue Wire. He put out a really good idea where, all right, they aren't fining for flopping anymore. Like they thought they did it for a little while, and even while they were doing that, like they never fined superstars. Like that was always kind of fun to kind of laugh at that. Like no all-stars really got fined, or if they did, they were like borderline all-stars.
Right.
Let's do away with that.
They've acknowledged that there's a problem. It's just maybe the way they've addressed it is not all that effective in deterring what they were trying to deter.
Let's do away with that and implement, like, add flops to the technical foul count. Like, that was his idea. And it's like, if you flop and you get caught flopping enough times, you're going to miss a game, you know? And put that on the line here, because it is a serious problem. It's like we talked about the other day. And I hate, like this is where we just had a game two in which an underdog, immense underdog, just took a 2-0 lead, right? Mm-hmm. We just had a game seven between two teams that have like 37 storylines between them.
Right.
You know?
I was like a CP3, the ways it, like, so if they would have won, this would have been the Lou Dort game forever and ever and ever. Right. Like, there's just sometimes there's games where, like, one dude out of nowhere just like, what? Like, and that would have been this game. And then CP3, anyway.
I would have asked you, hey, Pete, can we hold off on recording? Because I want to enjoy Twitter a little bit longer.
Oh, absolutely. This would have been just the most epic Twitter night. But yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, the reason I'm saying these things is because, like, at the end of this, what's the conversation going to be about? What's a sizable portion of the conversation going to be about? It's like, was Drogic's foul a foul? And then because of Drogic's foul, does that now mean that Giannis's foul has to be a foul?
And how it shouldn't does that even impact? Be what we're talking about in the first place. Like, let him decide the game.
But it is going to be what we talk about. Like, that's my thing. That's what I'm talking about here. Is that, like, we are once again, like, in this setting, talking about these referees because the game has become, and sports in general has become so fucking litigious. Like, it is, everything is about, like, you know, in the NFL, what the hell is a catch? Was he taking his second or third step up the field? And if he was taking his second or third steps, were his shoulders square to the touchdown line? And in basketball, it's like, all right, so was his second hand on the ball? And then if his second hand was on the ball, does that count? Does that start the count for the 1-2-3 or the 1-2.5 to take a shot? And it's just like, was somebody straight up? Was this guy off the ground? Was this guy doing this? Was this guy doing it? And I find myself wringing my pulling my hair out of my head at an age where it's just not very smart for us to pull hair out of our head. I find myself just yanking it out because I'm saying, this isn't fucking basketball. This is the most talented the NBA has ever been, ever, ever. Like we can look back to the golden age of the 80s. We can look back to Michael Jordan's era. We could look back even to the basketball that you and I grew up with. This is the most talented the league has ever been. And it's also arguably some of the least watchable stuff because of bullcrap like we saw at the end of that game. I find myself just saying, guys, you wouldn't do this if you were playing at the Rucker. You wouldn't do this if you were playing at your local YMCA. You wouldn't do this at your local 24-hour. Why the hell is this such a big part of the NBA basketball, the absolute highest level of basketball that exists in the world? Why is this such a big part of it? And it's because the NBA knows that it has a problem, but refuses to actually do anything to fix it.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of places in life in general of which we do not hold enforcement to standards. Or to high enough standards, right? To those who enforce the rules of a league or of society. Whatever could you
be talking about, Pete?
I'm not trying. No, this is something that, just on principle, right? Mm-hmm. It's important, right? These are the people with power. They can make big decisions that sway the outcome of, like, if that game. So Miami, the same referee made the call in the Miami Twice. Game mm-hmm. on both plays.
Mark Davis, right. I think.
I actually respected the last one because justice was served, right? Mm-hmm. In that the Dragic play shouldn't have been called a foul. Mm-hmm. It's this huge play at the end of the game, right? It should have been, that should have been ball game, and Miami won.
Yeah.
So it, very much makeup call type thing. So I get it. It's, you'd rather have zero bad calls, but having two in that circumstance is better than one, mm-hmm. right? Because it's the justice is served, but you've got the officials have a lot of power. That's the nature of, they get to decide what is a foul, what is a violation of the rule and what isn't. That's a lot of power, right? That's not a judgment. That's just the nature of, they're the ones that decide, because you don't want each team calling their own, because they could never be fair about it. But in, there's a great deal of responsibility in that, right? In that there has to be a standard set on certain things. And in many ways, like, it's really hard to ref, right? So they're like, these are the best refs in the world, the best basketball refs in the world. What I'm saying is not specific to an individual ref. And some guys are more on the scale or not, but just from a league-wide perspective, the dial on how officious and litigious the referees are is turned up way too high. Yeah. We need to turn it back, because it's getting in the way of the spirit of the game.
I also think, like, the players deserve some blame on this too. You know, I understand why they're doing it, but the grift has gone on too long. Like, we got to stop. Like,
but if they're getting rewarded for it, why would they stop?
That's
ground zero, you know?
I think we could do both, though. Like, I think the most of the weight on this falls on the referees, right? The most of the burden here of blame falls on the referees and frankly the league in general for how litigious this thing has become. But also, like, at some point, like, I could technically go out there, turn the corner. I basically, where our car, where we turn out of our apartment, it's 65 miles an hour, right? On the road that is, like, right outside our mm-hmm. apartment complex. I could go out there and I could turn into that street and drive slow and then hope to get rear-ended because I don't like my car anymore, you know? But there's, like, a certain level of decency that's involved with, like, the way that we don't try to take advantage of these rules. And, like, this insurance fraud that a lot of the NBA players are trying to pull off out there, like, it's got to stop, man. Like, and I think that's where I think some of the players, we saw how ridiculous how the end of that game looked.
That
right?
was the silliest end of a game I've ever seen.
Yeah, especially a game seven.
It was ridiculous.
It was stupid, and that's where I think the NBA or the referees deserve some credit for allowing those guys to look so stupid in that spot. And maybe if they did that a bunch, they would, you know, guys would want to stop looking so stupid. And maybe that's how you fix it. But also, like, let's stop trying to game the system. It's not a great way to approach the game. It's a very cynical way to play the game. And I don't like real. I don't really appreciate. I'm a cynic by nature. I don't need extra cynicism in the sport that I love.
Certainly not in your sports, right? There's plenty to be cynical about everywhere else.
It'd right.
be nice to see, like, guys going toe to toe and trying to, like, watching Mitchell and Murray go at it was a joy. You know?
Yeah.
And there are guys in this game, right, that were doing that too.
And there's a level of respect there too. Like,
oh,
like,
hell yeah.
I really feel like, and you saw it at the end of that game where they embraced each other and they came together and they said, like, dude, congratulations on this incredible series. Best of luck moving forward. Yeah. I think there's a level of respect that comes with playing the game straight up in that moment. Whereas, like, I don't know if I could respect James Harden if I was looking across the court at him. I don't know if I could respect Chris Paul and Dame Lillard and Kemba Walker when he does the same stuff as a Celtic. Like, if I was guarding him at some point, I would lose respect for the guy that I was going against, because that's not a very respectful way to play the game. And I agree with you completely that, like, the foundation of the issue here is the league itself and the people tasked with putting these rules in place. Also, though, Like, we have to hold players accountable for such a cynical style of play.
I get it, but again, and there's ties to the real world. Like, there's greatly incentivized to find those little gaps in the rules and find the little, well, technically, parts of the NBA rule book.
Like, right? Well, technically, and this is a podcast about the NBA.
Right, right.
Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we got to look ahead to Lakers Rockets. I want to pick up this conversation about the awards, the regular season awards. Harrison and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. We'll see if we have enough time to get to that. Plenty of stuff to get you through your now Thursday afternoon. Today's show is brought to you by rockauto.com. Look, I would love to tell you that I grew up watching Dad fix our old car and learn the ins and outs of vehicle maintenance, but I did not. My dad is one of the least handy people you will ever possibly meet, and unfortunately I inherited that about him. And but that's still the kind of thing that you can improve on, and Rock Auto has really helped me do that, so that should something go wrong, I feel comfortable enough to say, yeah, I think I might be able to try to fix that. And rockauto.com makes it so that if you try to fix it, you aren't paying an arm and a leg to get the tool to fix yourself, and then have to, in my case, wind up having to go and get it fixed anyway. And that's that kind of confidence, as evidenced by somebody like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander choking down the stretch of every time he touched the ball of that game against Houston. That confidence matters. So rockauto.com lets you shop with the confidence, knowing that you are going to say you are going to get great parts, and you're going to get those great parts at great prices, regardless of your background. So head on over to rockauto.com, use, and then write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. All right, so let's start with Lakers Rockets. And I'm walking away from having seen the Rockets play. I'm saying Lakers in 5 or 6.
There, you know, I'm naturally paranoid by nature, especially after that's actually one thing I've noticed since I was in the hospital. Like, after that, I'm like very much like all right, what are all the ways where this can go wrong? Like, I'm like, that's how I address almost any situation. It's like, all right, looking around, like, okay, that could be a problem. This could be an issue here.
I'm recording a podcast with my wife. How about that?
Yeah, I am.
I'm very much like, fuck it. Let's like it. Let's see. Let's see. Water shots for everybody. Jen is like the opposite of that. You're apparently the opposite of that too.
It's similar. Yeah. In that, like, look, did I think the Portland Trailblazers were going to beat the Lakers? Absolutely not. I knew we were a few tiers better than them, but is there a version of it where we're in the bubble and we've lost our focus, right? Guys are unhappy, of which, for personal reasons, there are all sorts of plausible reasons where that could be true, right? Where guys are uncomfortable and not focused, right? Not that that's what I want or expect of them, but it's possible. It's not far-fetched. And as a result of us being lacking focus and being undisciplined, this guy who's scoring 50, 60 points every night does that to us. And, you know, now, again, the likelihood of that I thought was very low, but I'm always going to look for those places, right? So with that spirit in mind, the Houston Rockets are a dangerous team. We have to take them seriously, and we have to play with focus. The reason why, like, the 27 missed threes in a row that one year in Game 7 and some of the difficulties that we saw on the offensive end in this game, and even in previous games. I didn't see Game 6, but, you know, game 4, I believe, was one that was similar in this respect, that when teams close out, like, just the nature of playoff basketball is how much you're focused and how hard you're trying on every single play makes way more of a difference than I think people realize. Mm-hmm. We see somebody with talent and they're like, oh, like, they're incredible. They must be the best in the game at this, right? But sometimes, and we, so I think this is maybe true with Milwaukee to an extent, is like the ability to play at your best over the course of 82 games doesn't mean that you're the best team. Mm-hmm. It means that you're like driving in fifth gear the most often.
Yeah.
Right? Now, you could be the best team too, right? And you have to be very good to be the best team over the course of an 82-game season.
Yeah, to even have that gear.
Right. But like what changes about, say, this in the key versus three, like the severity of how the Rockets play, right? Of very strict adherence to the idea of at the rim, behind the 3-point line, five out, no traditional big, all of the things that the Rockets are, they philosophically build themselves toward. Some of those things, like, they work during the regular season because teams aren't closing out as hard. Teams are making more rotational mistakes. They aren't forcing you into, like, there's a basketball happens as a sequence, right? So that if one guy gets beat off the dribble, we're going to help off of this guy. If it goes here, this is our rotation. If the pass goes here, that's our rotation. And so it's like this, it's this never-ending decision tree. That's what I love about basketball. It's this never-ending decision tree of which you have to be really locked in and focused to be in the moment in a split second going, okay, rotate to, or yeah, drop down to help the helper. All right, close out to the wing. The, you know, this guy closes out to the corner. I need to drop down to cut off on the drive when he attacks the closeout. It's all of these sequential thing, right? That happens. You go much deeper into the sequence in the playoffs because everybody's paying attention and trying as hard as they can. So as a result of that, you can get chased off of two of the levels of the three levels that you can get scored on, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I don't think completely abandoning the mid-range makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. That said, if we're not disciplined with our closeouts, if we're not really bringing the heat with our focus and effort level on rotating out on the perimeter, they can beat the hell out of us. But that's something that if we focus and lock in, I think we're going to be okay.
You want to know what I'm actually the most concerned about with the series?
What's that?
This is going to sound super lame, super homery, whatever. The thing I'm actually the most concerned about is that the series becomes super litigious, because the Lakers are the better team. And they are the better team because of how much better they are at the top of their roster, right? And if PJ Tucker picks up an offensive foul that could go either way a couple times that knocks AD out of a first half here and there, or when LeBron is handling the ball, if somebody is guarding him and he hands the ball off expecting to get it back, but like the handoff isn't quite smooth enough and the referee decides to call a foul. And this is something that LeBron is really good at not getting called for, but I'm just saying, like, ticky-tack fouls on LeBron and AD are the thing that I'm probably the most concerned about here. Because so long as LeBron and AD are healthy and able to play in this series, the Lakers have the upper hand. But not only because of how the game is refereed in general, but especially because of how undersized the Rockets are and how smaller players get refereed, that makes me a little nervous. Like, that's the aspect of it that makes me the most nervous, even more nervous than, like, you know, the Rockets going nuclear from three. They're going to do that one game. More nervous than, like, the Lakers going super cold from three. That might happen once in a game. But the one constant here that we have seen in the NBA is that small players get calls. And if the Lakers, the bigger team here, doesn't get calls to the extent that this becomes a lot more interesting than it should be, that's what I'm nervous about.
I mean, I thought we did a good job. There was a huge free throw discrepancy in the last series, and both Dame and CJ look for those calls, especially Dame, mm-hmm. you know? So I think that we've at least got one series in the books where we've proven that our superior size and athleticism is more likely to draw a whistle and get us to the free throw line than their craft and or looking to kind of game the rules. So I feel okay on that front. We're going to need to attack them in the sky, you know, like make PJ Tucker beat. I kind of think of it as like a fade route in football, right? Have Anthony Davis boxing out the five as Rob Gronkowski boxing out the 5'10" cornerback, right? And throw it to him into the end zone to get that TD. Cause like Tucker's just not going to be able to win that. So that's like, I feel good about this series. I do. I think we're the better team. I think that if this were to be played 100 times, we would win the majority by a good amount. But there are versions of this that go the wrong way, right? Like where our, you know, where our shooters go ice cold. We've seen that happen.
Yeah.
This is, if we were to lose a series because our shooters went ice cold, this would be one of them. Just by the nature of the Rockets' defense swarms, right? Like that's the whole point of what they do, is not to be big, but to be swarming and to make fast rotations and to, you know, PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, who is great in this game. It's this really series, reliant upon.
I was so impressed by Robert Covington. He's really effing good.
Yeah. And he was ready for the moment, right? He was one of those guys that really in a game that was kind of absurd, like Robert Covington made some big plays and so they're dependent upon the swarming abilities and, you know, PJ Tucker's ability to beat a guy to a spot and draw a charge. Covington had a great block late in the game. He can help there, as can House. Jeff Green, I think, is an underrated kind of solid vet guy. And then you've got
wish he was on the Lakers.
Then you got their, you know, attack on the perimeter. So there are versions of this where it doesn't go well, but I think that if the team is as locked in as they were in the last series, we will strip away a lot of their opportunities behind the three-point line. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we can chase them, they're not going to take the shots from mid-range. And I like our chances of, if we can get them attack at the basket, Russ is going to be very important in this respect because he's a power guard. And he's like the one element of their team that's powerful. And so, but if we get them contesting them at the rim, I like our chances. They're not built to take those mid-range shots. So really the area we really need to focus on is behind the three-point line and making sure they're not getting those shots.
Yep, absolutely. Let's take a quick second here. And when we come back, we are going to continue to look at the series ahead, continue to look at the league as a whole, and just see where this conversation takes us. I think, like, as you were talking, even as I was talking, one of the things that I realized was that, like, the fact that I'm more nervous about refereeing than I am about anything Houston can actually do basketball-wise probably bodes well for the Lakers.
You know, you're a good barometer for me of my, like, Homer-ness, right? Because you're naturally kind of cynical and kind of like...
Me?
You know, you can take like the bad version of it. So like when last round you're like, yeah, I'm not worried about them. I'm like, actually, that's kind of comforting, right? Because there's some degree of forest from the trees with me. You know, like I'm in game tape all the time, right? And I'm like, well, if they do this play, then, you know, we're going to have Cutter with this. And when sometimes like you got to zoom out and be like, you saw how they played when –
You see their records, right?
Right, yeah. And like kind of how they played in game 7 and how, like you worried about that? You know, there's,
Matt and you know, the guys that I talk to in like group chats on Twitter always like, they can't stand how much I tend to oversimplify the thing, whatever the topic is, you know.
It's important. It's one of the wisdoms. I always talk about the basketball wisdoms. The first glance, because you'd admit this, right? Like in terms of like how you watch, right? You're watching from a more zoomed out approach, right?
Yeah.
And like, that's valuable, right? Being able to see the forest from the trees and be like, that team's going to beat that team? Like, right. Nah, probably not, you know? And it doesn't have to be that much more complicated.
I mean, like in the history of basketball, the bigger team and the more skilled team tends to win. you know. And in this case, LeBron is significantly better than any player, you know, whether it's Russell Westbrook or James Harden, who are going to play a central role. And Anthony Davis is bigger than everybody on the Rockets who are going to play a central role. So
right. Yeah, the exceptions to that are when those teams are young, right? Yeah. So you can beat a bigger, stronger, faster team when they're inexperienced,
yeah.
But we're on the opposite end of that spectrum as well, especially yeah. with our best guy.
Yeah, because so, like I was watching, because remember the last thing, one of the last conversations that we had was about Lu Dortz and the defense he could potentially play on LeBron. And the thing I said was that, like, all right, if Lu Dortz actually makes an impact on LeBron James over the course of a seven-game series as a 20, I think he's 21,
he's 20.
21-year-old rookie, undrafted rookie, he would be on path to be one of the greatest defenders that the NBA has ever seen, you know? Right. And I was thinking about that, especially tonight, because he was still giving James Harden problems. And actually, it wound up working perfectly for the conversation that you and I are having here, in that, like, LeBron doesn't have that game against Lu Dort in a game seven that his team absolutely needs to win, especially in the first round, you know?
Right.
Like that just doesn't happen. And, you know, you started the show today talking about how, like, far too often James Harden was making passes without having really gained an advantage. And that's like, that's LeBron's strong suit, is that he doesn't even have to take a dribble. You talked in the other show about how, you know, LeBron can look off the safety, the secondary helper, and then make a skip pass that really punishes that safety for the step that he takes there. That's not taking a dribble, but that's still gaining an advantage. And I was watching James Harden. It was one of the things that I was getting really frustrated about. It was like, all right, your shot might not be falling. You might not be getting to the free throw line in the way that you would anticipate, which, like, this is how many game sevens now, Harden? Like, how have you not adjusted to this at this point? Like, not getting calls in a game seven. Anywho, I was watching that game from James Harden, and I was thinking to myself, A, nobody on the Rockets roster is going to give LeBron the same troubles that Dort gave Harden, just in a basketball sense. But then, like, over the course of a series, LeBron would figure that out. And what was annoying in watching Harden was that he didn't, you know, like he didn't really ever adjust to Dort. It was basically that, you know, Rocco played well enough and the other Rockets role players played well enough that they were able to outstrip OKC. I'm interested. So you and I know you don't like talking about regular season awards and all of that stuff. Harrison made a really interesting point, and I want to know what you think about this in a show. And don't if any of you guys tell Harrison that I complimented one of his points, you are not allowed to listen to this show ever again. but Harrison basically said that we can't continue to have amnesia with these regular season awards, that basically, like, year in, year out, we're told Rudy Gobert is the best statistical defensive player in the NBA. And then year in, year out, you get to the playoffs and his team comes up short. Year in, year out, we're told Mike Budenholzer is this wizard as a coach. And then year in, year out, his team falls short of expectations in the playoffs. Now, we don't know. I mean, the fact that he's already down 0-2 signals that there's a falling of short going on here. They might pull this out, but they're going to now have to work harder for it than originally anticipated.
They're going to have to win 4 out of 5 games.
Yeah. So Harrison's point was basically that we can't continue to ignore, even though it's not a postseason award, they are literally regular season awards. We can't keep ignoring what happens in the postseasons after these guys win these awards, when it's the same effing season the next year and we arrive at the same outcome. What do you think about the general point here?
Yeah, no, it's because in a lot of ways, that's one thing that I'm coming to realize more and more from watching tape of the Lakers and against specific teams. That's what's so fun about the playoffs. You know, my first playoffs is like, oh, I'm just watching Houston today. Like, that's what I'm doing. And it's super fun to do that. But one thing that really shows is that I think the best teams use the regular season as kind of practice for the postseason. Like, remember we were watching all season Anthony Davis posting up from, you know, 15 feet away and like it's fine. It's okay. But it's not like superstar. Oh my God. He's killing him.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes. Right. But, and like, why is LeBron just, you know, he's going to dribble to his right and stare down at the ball and then pull it back and shoot a three every time. Right. I think stuff like the AD post-ups in particular is trying to get guys reps and trying to see, like, when we played Houston last time, when the one time that we played them, it was at Staples, it wasn't in the bubble, and it wasn't quite in the bubble, but we posted up AD a ton, even though it wasn't working that much. Well, I mean, there's probably some value in probing this new style and getting some tape on, like, hey, what do they do when we do try to do that? And so I think that part of why, like, it's not an accident that certain things that worked during the regular seasons don't work in the postseason. They're not as good. And that said, with Milwaukee, like, I look at who the second best player was on most championship teams. And I don't think that they have that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's not Chris Middleton.
Chris Middleton's a great player. Like, he's a really good player, but
yeah, I'm not, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'll say really good. I'm not going great.
And that's fine. But that's the point that I'm making though. Right. Right. Is that, like, it's usually another superstar, at least one more guy. And the times when that's not the case, like last year, there was big time injuries in the finals, but if everybody's healthy, the team with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry probably wins the title. Right. Like,
right.
That's how basketball works, with very few exceptions. And I don't know if they've got that guy.
Well, like, I mean, even to take that a step further, like, their third best player is, who's their third best player? You know, like, that, like, their third best player is like Brooke Lopez, but he's not normally the caliber of a third best player on a championship team. Eric Bledsoe, maybe, but Eric Bledsoe in the playoffs is always an adventure. George Hill, a past his prime George Hill. Oh yeah, I just, my thing is, and you made the point earlier that, like, the regular season, what you wind up getting awarded for in the regular season is you played harder on a regular basis than your opponent.
Right.
And and if we're awarding regular season awards for, like, the person who played harder in a regular season that we all kind of acknowledge, by the way, isn't that meaningless? Either we have to rethink the awards themselves, and in my opinion, include the playoffs leading up to the finals. Mm-hmm. This is a point you make all the time. We cannot continue to allow regular season awards to carry such import in the way that we analyze, you know, how good a career is, or just in the general conversation about the NBA, how important two-time MVP and, like, you know, three-time defensive player of the year, whatever it is. We need to move past the way that we look at some of these awards. You basically make this point all the time, where it's like, either we rethink the awards themselves, or we stop allowing these awards to be so important and carry such a weight in the conversations about the NBA that we have.
Yeah, I think awards are important, right? And I would like us to go the route of, you know, rethinking it and including the playoffs, because especially amongst the good teams, like, not every team doesn't play hard every night during the regular season, but a lot of those teams are young teams. A lot of them are, don't quite entirely know what they're doing yet. So by the time they get to the playoffs, like, Memphis Grizzlies are a good example of this. They played hard, right? That was a team that went at it for most of the season. That's part of what makes them very enjoyable and entertaining to watch, is that they go hard, right? But at that age, and just as a function of how young their key guys are, they're not really a threat to beat the better teams. Mm-hmm. They're not going to beat the Clippers in a series. They're not going to beat the Lakers in a series. They're just too young. And so and the Lakers and Clippers of the world know that. And so during the regular season, there's any heck, even when you play a rival, like, you don't think the Clippers have had us and an eye on us all season. You don't think we've had an eye on them. And in the games where we play each other, there's some mix of, we want to beat these guys, but also some, hey, we might have to play these guys seven times at the end of all this, and we don't want to show everything that we do.
Yep.
And right. So there's all these factors at play where if you're rewarding players and teams and executives and coaches for, if you're giving them a reward for one thing, but what you're telling them they're actually playing for is another thing, which is being able to win a championship. Like, you saw how Kawhi's starting to ramp up, right? Yeah. Like, we got some reminders of like, oh yeah, that guy's scary.
Yeah, he's a straight up killer.
Yeah. And so he wasn't like that all year. Like, he was great all year, right? But there's just like a different level of like, oh, it's time. We're starting. Mm-hmm. And he's going to look to hit that. And that's what LeBron's going to do too, right? That's when you've got some of the – that's what the basketball gods do, is they've got that gear where they can – and they know exactly when to unleash it. And so we need to – if you're telling LeBron in his 17th season to go play for a title, like, that's what he should be judged on.
Yeah.
How valuable was his contribution toward what he's actually playing for? Not 82 regular season games, but what he's actually playing for. That's how I think those award. I think we should do away with the idea of a regular season MVP. And it would be very easy to give the MVP to just the best guy on the team that won the finals every year. And in a lot of seasons, like, that's probably fair. There will be some, you know, exceptions to that. But that's the direction I'd like to see it go.
Yeah, I think basically, you know, another way to make that point is most of the people wearing or winning these awards, most of the guys winning these awards are a part of the best teams in the league anyway, right? So they're all going to be competing come playoff time anyway. So why not just extend it? You never see an MVP of like a losing team, the MVP coming from a below 500 team. You never see the coach of the year coaching a below 500 team, even six man of the year, right? Usually is the guy who scores the most off the bench, but we've also started to value the input towards winning in that regard too. Defensive player of the year, same thing, right? A good defense, like, that's great if you have the best defense in the league, but if you have like the 30 if you're like the 40th worst offense in the league, then nobody really cares how good you were on defense, because you were probably a really bad team. And so for these awards, if these guys are going to be competing at, you know, that extended portion of the season anyway, then why not just extend the time that we are evaluating value for each of these awards anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Tell you guys what, we are going to essentially have an extra day tomorrow because the Lakers aren't going to be playing. Maybe Pete and I will watch the Clippers game and come back and talk after that. We'll see. But at the very least, I'm thinking we'll probably do some mailbag stuff. So maybe I'll send out a question, or I'll call for some questions on Twitter. And maybe you guys can send them in either to iTunes or to the LakersLockedOn@gmail.com account. Either way, we'll find something interesting to talk about here as the Lakers get ready now to play their series against the Houston Rockets, a series that could go badly, but I still think I have the Lakers fairly heavily favored. That might be the kiss of death. I'm not Ry Cole. I'm not that bad at like, you know, guessing things, but you know, who knows? Please, though, continue to stay safe out there, and Pete and I will talk to you tomorrow.